like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Mary Finelli, founder and president of Fishfield, which describes itself as the sole organization devoted to promoting the recognition of fish as sentient beings deserving of respect and protection. An all-volunteer operation, Fishfield seeks to inform and enlighten folks on a multitude of topics, including sharing information about fish that some might find surprising. For example, they can be taught skills, and they've been observed using rocks as tools. Fishfield also pursues an array of campaigns to combat cruelty. We'll hear more about Fishfield, its mission, efforts, and assorted fish stories when I speak with Mary Finelli in a moment here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll play back the brief conversation I recorded with Jason Flatt, founder of Friends to the Forlorn Pitbull Rescue, a Georgia-based organization with a national reputation developed in part through Flatt's philosophy of rescuing all manner of pit bulls, very much including ones who've endured the most horrific circumstances and others who are right on the cusp of being euthanized. As he explains, Friends of the Forlorn want the unwanted. Before we go any further, two programming notes. The first is that Talking Animals will not air during the final 2 weeks of July. WNF has opted to preempt all regular 10 a.m. weekday programming then to make way for extended Democracy Now! Coverage of the presidential convention. So I'll return on August 3rd. The other programming note is that I'll be doing a music show tomorrow, July 14th, as I fill in for Nancy C. on the Thursday It's the Music from 1 to 3:30 p.m. right here on WNF, streaming on WMNF.org. I hope you'll join me for that. Right now, though, let's meet Mary and hear about Fishfield with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at WMNF.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Mary Finelli to Talking Animals. Good morning, Mary.
Oh, hello, Duncan. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thanks for joining us this morning on Talking Animals. We have all kinds of ground to cover, just Fishfield alone in terms of its mission, campaigns, and other efforts, to say nothing of the much broader topic of fish. But first, in that you're the founder of Fishfield, I think we should start out finding a bit about you. One of the things I find interesting is that you in no way present yourself as a lifelong fish advocate. In fact, in large measure, it appears that you sort of became a fish advocate by default. How would you respond to that observation?
Well, I would say it's very true. I've been interested and involved in animal protection, really interested in animal protection all my life, and working in it in the last three decades. I always wanted to try to help the most animals in the greatest way possible. So initially I was drawn to the farmed animal protection movement and worked in there for a number of years. And eventually I came to realize, very slowly, but that fish are by far the greatest category of exploited animals, and they suffer some of the worst abuses, yet they receive the least protection or even concern, even from within the animal protection community. So it just was escaping neglect, area of neglect, and we just thought that someone should advocate for fish and promote advocacy. Advocacy for fishes, so we started Fishfield.
I see. So in effect, it sounds like almost a job opening in another department, and you sort of transferred in.
Well, you could call it that, but we're an all-volunteer organization. So
Yeah. No, I just mean the comparison between like, hey, we have a vacancy over here. Can you step in and help out that department more in that sense?
Yes, I mean, it's really a glaring gap when you consider how immense the field of fishes are, the group of fishes are. There's more fish species than all the vertebrate animals combined. So it's just an immense number of fishes. They estimate there are over 30,000 species of fish, and then within each species, can be, billions or more. So just an immense category. And as I said, some of the ways they're mistreated are just really horrific.
Right. Well, we'll, of course, get into some of those in a moment. But I'm curious, too, sound like you spent so many years in other forms of animal protection. What sort of work or what position did you hold just before deciding, hey, you know what, fish need my help, and let's launch Fish Fuel? What were you doing in those, like, those prior years, immediately prior? Yes.
Well, I moved down to Washington, D.C. in the mid-'80s to volunteer for PETA, which I did initially. And then I that was when I started, you know, really realizing that farmed animals were the ones that needed the most help. And then I worked for a farm animal reform movement for a while, and then I worked for a National Alliance for Animal Legislation. And then I went back to school and got my degree in animal science. And then I worked at the Humane Society of the U.S. in the farm animal section as a researcher and eventually program director. And then Animal Place in California started an initiative, Farmed Animal Watch, an online news digest of farmed animal issues. And I was the one who wrote and edited and produced it. That's really when I started, I believe that's when I really started realizing just how terrible the situation was for fishes. And eventually just realized that, you know, something should be done for them, and hoping somebody else would step up, but nobody else did. So, yes, sort of by default.
Yeah, so you kind of appointed yourself ultimately, I guess. But
right.
Let's get into some specifics of Fish Fuel. I mean, what is it more precisely? What does it do? What does it seek to do?
Well, as you pointed out, we are the sole organization promoting advocacy for fishes as sentient beings. Largely what we try to do is educate the public, inform them that science has shown that fish are sentient. They do feel fear and pain. And as I mentioned, they are by far the largest category of animals used for food. It's been estimated that between some 1 to 3 3 trillion wild-caught fish are killed each year for human food, and that is a conservative estimate. And then within that category, then in addition to the animals, the fish who are caught are also animals who are unintentionally caught. The way fishing is, the methods employed for fishing are so indiscriminate. They're also catching dolphins and seals, turtles, even whales and birds, just hundreds of thousands of other animals, if not more. And also if a ship has met its quota of fish, but they catch more, they'll just throw them back dead or dying. So just immense numbers of animals who are caught in the wild-caught fishing industry. And then, of course, there's also farmed fish, immense numbers of farmed fish and other aquatic animals. And in addition to that, there are animals who are killed because they compete with humans for food. We have cormorants off the West Coast being shot by the government because they compete said to be competing for salmon. Then there are animals who depend on fish, who genuinely need fish for food, including there are people throughout the world who genuinely would starve without fish to eat. So when we're eating fish and other animal-based seafood, we're depriving them of their food. There are sea lions starving off the West Coast and birds who are starving for lack of food. So it really just touches on such a huge number of animals, including humans. Human slavery is rampant in the fishing industry. So it's really, really a keystone animal that affects so many other animal species.
Yeah, there was really excellent, disturbing, but excellent reporting in the New York Times in recent months about the human slavery element of that. But
right. The Associated Press did an undercover investigation, and the New York Times had a series of an article series on reporting on that, and truly disturbing.
So, of course, this show is based in Florida, which obviously is a place where fishing reigns supreme. So, I don't know that our conversation this morning is likely to make many discard their rods and reels right off the bat. But what are some of the facts? I mean, you obviously rattle off a large number of statistics and disturbing trends and the ripple effects. If you had to sort of pinpoint if two or three, I mean, what are some that have emerged that really might give some fishermen and certainly the rest of us pause?
Yes. Well, I would hope first and foremost that people would realize that fish are sentient. They do feel fear and pain, despite the popular myth that they are not sentient. I think it's pretty apparent, should be apparent to anyone who sees a fish on a hook, the way they behave, that they're clearly in distress. And science has shown that they do have a central nervous system, they have pain receptors, they react to painful stimuli the way you would expect an animal in pain to react, they respond to painkillers the way you would expect an animal whose pain has been alleviated to respond, and they quickly learn to avoid painful stimuli. So it's the science is in. Victoria Braithwaite, she's professor of fisheries and biology at Penn State University, and she has very eloquently presented the very compelling evidence that fish are sentient in a book called Do Fish Feel Pain? And her answer to that is yes, they do. And in the last decade or so, there have been other studies that really brought to light that fish are sentient. So that's really primary. People need to realize that fish do feel fear and pain. Also, again, even if you're catching a fish and releasing them, so-called catch-and-release fishing, that's still stressing the fish and injuring the fish, and many who are released ultimately die as a result of the injury and trauma that they suffered. All the nutrients we derive from fish and animal products in general, we can easily obtain from plant sources, and that also goes with fish oil. We can easily get omegas from plant sources that are healthier for us. They don't have the contaminants, and they're not so prone to rancidity. They don't have the cholesterol. They have fiber, which animal products don't have. Good sources of omegas, for example, would be walnut, flaxseed oil, flaxseed, chia seeds, hemp seeds. If you're looking for a concentrated form, there are algae supplements, which is how fish obtain their omegas. So really, all the nutrients that we get from fish, we can easily get from plant sources. For people who like seafood, there are marvelous vegan versions of virtually every type of seafood imaginable. There's even vegetarian shark fin. On our website, we have hundreds of recipes and links to companies that make vegan seafood products, which are really booming in popularity now. Some fine dining establishments serve vegan seafood. There are restaurants that serve exclusively vegan seafood. We have a vegan seafood cookbook that has written by a registered dietitian, has a lot of good nutritional information and recipes, and you can make them with, there's really an array of ingredients that people use to replicate flavors and textures, and really pretty much whatever you have a hankering for, there is a vegan version of that's better for us, better for the animals, and better for the environment.
Well, you're kind of zooming through a lot of things I was hoping to cover, but we'll definitely expand on some of those, including come back maybe a little bit more detail about the vegan seafood. But let me let folks know who are just maybe tuning in. My guest is Mary Finelli, founder and president of Fish Feel, which aims to promote the recognition of fish as sentient beings, inform and enlighten with notable and often surprising fish facts, among other efforts. If you'd like to ask Mary a question about fish or any aspect of fish or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So one of the things you kind of scooted by there too is that I think a lot of people just either don't know or just don't have reason to maybe consider much is the catch and release element, where they would say, well, yeah, we went out, we tossed them back, everything's cool. But I mean, sometimes more evidently than others, but a lot of times maybe not, may not be immediately evident that there really is a pretty serious impact for that fish that's been caught and released, even though it didn't stay in the bucket and didn't come home with you or whatever, that there's much more impact than people might imagine.
Right. I mean, you may put, or someone, not you, hopefully, but someone could put a fish back in the water and the fish might swim away and appear to be fine, but that fish will probably be reluctant to eat initially because it's been he or she has been traumatized. So they're going to be affected. They won't be as reactive to predators. They're basically going through post-traumatic stress syndrome. They were injured, a hook going to impale a fish's mouth, or sometimes they get hooked in the eye or the gut, or can get hooked anywhere. So they're injured, and they may linger for hours or days or weeks, but many of them do ultimately die as a result of the trauma that they suffered.
Yeah.
So it's not a peaceful, fishing is presented as this peaceful, wholesome, nonviolent activity, but that's totally untrue. A lot of children are introduced to fishing as a way to introduce them to nature, a way to learn to respect nature, but there's nothing respectful about needlessly harming an animal. Really what is happening is they're being they're being desensitized to animal suffering and indoctrinated into animal abuse. I mean, would you treat any other animal that way, that it's considered not only acceptable but even admirable to injure them and torture them? Because really what's been happening, they're being impaled, they're being hauled through the water, they're being manhandled. Fish have a protective outer coating, and when you touch the fish, you're removing that, which helps with their immune system, so you're taking that away, and then suffocated, and then either killed or put back in the water and very possibly to die. So it's a very violent activity, and it's animal abuse.
Like many things, really, in the animal realm and animal welfare realm, I mean, a lot of times people just don't really have occasion to pause and examine kind of what they're doing and what the impact might be, and only when they do, or only if they have something pointed out in a reasonable fashion, do they, in many cases, at least, end up with a sort of a little bit more awareness. And so I guess that's, in some ways, a fundamental tenet of Fish Feel, is to sort of get people to maybe just take a moment, step back, and really think about something that, that you say. Kids start off, again, I'm talking to you from Florida, so, you know, fishing.
And it's not surprising, Duncan, that people think, you know, don't think about it, because it is presented by industry and government and recreation departments and society views it as, you know, a very wholesome pastime. But if you really think about what it is, knowing who fish are and how they are, I don't see how anyone cannot realize that it is animal abuse.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those things that only maybe in a conversation like this and some of the other work that you do would people, even if they don't like what they hear, and even if they ultimately don't accept it, we're prompting people to sort of take a moment and really reflect on something that just otherwise doesn't even get that kind of thought probably. In fact, we already got a couple of calls here. Let's maybe work one in. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Mary Finelli.
Hello.
Hello, it's you. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I'm going to really have to go out on here. I kind of disagree with it. How would, if this is so traumatizing for fish, how can you tag them and everything? I mean, they run a derby in Florida of tagged fish, and people catch them and win prizes. I don't think it's as, you know, barbaric as you're portraying it. And, you know, what's going to kill the fish around here is going to be the pollution, not the, you know, hook and liners. You know, right now our fish in the estuaries are dying slow death due to the algae and everything that's being, you know, put in by the nitrogen in the, you know, from the fertilizer.
Okay, so your point is that the blue-green algae and related pollution effects are...
Well, fish are tagged, and, you know, you're telling me, like, this is this big traumatizing experience, but fish are tagged for science, and they're being tracked for years, you know, whether it be sharks, whales. I mean, you know, sharks are caught by on a hook and line when they tag them.
Okay, so okay, I appreciate your call, and I appreciate your viewpoint. Let's get Mary to respond to that. Thank you for your call. Okay, Mary, your response to that, please?
Yes, they may be caught, you know, and by science. That doesn't necessarily mean that they all survive. They don't. And, you know, they may be doing it because they think it will ultimately benefit these animals. That's highly debatable, certainly not the ones who do perish as a result. And definitely pollution is a huge problem for fish and other aquatic animals and animals in general. But that doesn't negate the harm that fishing does. It doesn't excuse intentionally harming animals.
Not surprising, as I, again, mentioned, that the fact that we're having this conversation here is likely to elicit some responses of one kind or another. Let's take another caller. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Mary Finelli.
Hi, it's a great show. Great show, as always.
Thank you.
I'm going to have to disagree as well. I mean, I agree with everything your guest is saying. We fish 2 or 3 times a week, both off the piers and off our boat. And, I must tell you that I understand and I agree. I mean, it's pretty obvious that fish feel pain. But at the same time, we've made the decision, and we've had many discussions about this, about fish, do they have feelings, and, you know, I mean, and what are we doing here? Is this right? And we've just made the decision that human beings eat animals. And it's just one of those things, and we do it. And I always talk about the American Indians, how they used to kill buffalo, and they would, in a very wonderful way, they would use all the meat, all the bones, the skin for clothing and to make their tents and whatnot. I mean, and they would honor the animal. We do that too. I mean, and we do the best we can, but in the end, we eat animals. Additionally, I must say, it's sad. It is sad, but it's part of life. I mean, to us, you know, to our point of view.
Yeah.
And a lot of we see a lot of people, tourists, on the piers, for example, and, oh, look at the dolphins. Isn't it wonderful? The dolphins are so beautiful. And to fishermen, dolphins are a real nuisance. Additionally, I can tell you, they steal your catch. They steal your bait. They snag your lines. And just because they have big eyes and a smiley face, which is not really smiling, I mean, they're animals as well. I mean, you can respect them in the same way that we respect the other animals, but we don't see any difference between dolphins just because they're anthropomorphized on television and in so many other ways. And additionally, I have Japanese friends who, I mean, they're aghast at that documentary, The Cove. Those villagers trap those dolphins and eat those dolphins, and they've been doing that for thousands of years. It's just a matter of perspective is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Ultimately, and I'll wrap it up, ultimately it is very sad, but it is part of life, and that's my point. Thank you for letting me talk.
Okay, again, like you say, it is a matter of perspective, and we appreciate hearing yours. Mary, anything you'd like to respond by way of that caller's comments?
Sure, yeah. Well, I'm glad he's thinking about it, and happy he called in. You know, there may have been a time in our past when we needed to eat fish and other animals to survive, but that's no longer the case. We no longer need to. As has been mentioned before, the fish are dealing with pollution and effects of global warming that's really, you know, harmfully affecting a lot of aquatic animals. And they have so many problems facing them, so many man-made problems. And as far as dolphins, you know, they need to eat fish. We don't. So we're depriving them, you know, to blame them of so-called stealing fish is kind of silly, really, when you think about it. It's their food. They need to eat it. We don't. We have other resources available to us, and resources that are better for us. It doesn't have the mercury, the dioxin, the PCBs, the parasites, the cholesterol, all the many health hazards that accompany fish and other aquatic animals. The Center for Science and the Public Interest, every year they do an analysis of foodborne disease outbreaks, and they repeatedly find seafood to be the most hazardous food we can eat. So, you know, we have alternatives that are better for us, better for the animals, and better for the environment. Why intentionally harm animals when we don't need to? Deprive other animals of their food.
Okay, well, thanks, and we've got other callers and other emails. But one thing, when the previous caller was offering his comments, and then in some ways, as you were responding, made me sort of hark back a little bit to when you were at the earlier part of the conversation talking about the impact of the fishing, or especially the overfishing. If I understood you correctly, you were saying that there are some people who still absolutely require fish to survive and to eat. What peoples are we talking about in that sense?
Well, there's people in, you know, Africa and other places in the world that, you know, they're living a subsistence lifestyle, mm-hmm. and fish is a big part of their diet, that they need that food. Now, possibly they could be supplied with other types of food, but as far as their natural lifestyle, their subsistence lifestyle that they're living, they do require fish in order to survive. They need it to survive. Just as animal, dolphin, or whoever, another animal who would need that to survive, you know, we're not advocating that they'd be deprived of their food.
Right.
But, you know, as humans, we do have other resources available to us. And if we can thrive without harming others, why wouldn't we do that?
Okay, again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just joined us, my guest is Mary Finelli, founder and president of Fish Feel, which, among other facets of its sort of broad-based mission, seeks to promote the recognition of fish as sentient beings. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. Let's take another caller. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Mary Finelli.
Hello?
Hello, it's you. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi, Duncan. I just want to talk about the post-traumatic stress disorder that the lady had mentioned about the fish getting, you know.
Oh, you mean after, like, in terms of catch and release, or?
Yeah, well, what she's saying, after you catch one and you put it back, that mm-hmm. they're so stressed out that, and all. And to me, that's just a classic example of someone with a very closed mind and an extreme view. I mean, I have offshore fished off my entire life. And I can't tell you how many times we've caught a grouper, and it's too short, and we throw it back, and 2 minutes later, we're catching the same fish.
Okay, I'm sorry. Help me understand. I'm not sure quite how catching it, the grouper, throwing it back, and catching it again, I guess I'm not quite sure what point that makes.
Well, she's saying that the fish are so stressed out, they don't want to eat, and that sort of thing. So that's all I wanted.
I see. So let me just ask you this, though, because if they were kind of stressed or traumatized, wouldn't that make them more likely to bite on the same hook that they had just been caught on a moment ago or a few moments ago? Or
I don't know. Are you listening to what you just said?
Yeah, I am. That's why I'm just hard pressed to understand why you're saying a grouper that you caught, that you threw back, that got caught again on the same line, suggests that they're not at all traumatized.
Well, if you're on the boat and you see the fish coming back up the second time, very aggressive, and it's the exact same fish, I don't see any stress there.
You know? Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate your point of view, and thank you so much for your call.
Yes, sir.
All right. Mary, any comment there?
Yes. I mean, there have been scientific studies that have shown this, and of course, not necessarily every fish is going to react the same way. But as you pointed out, you know, the fish may be just so stunned by what happened to them that they might bite it. Or, you know, fish are trying to survive, so they are going after food. Maybe they would go after a hook because they think it's food. You know, that doesn't mean that they aren't stressed. It doesn't mean that they haven't been profoundly affected. And, you know, different fish are going to respond in different ways. But scientific studies have shown that they will be less prone to, they'll go in into secluded areas. They'll be less prone to eat, and some of them will, many of them will die.
All right, let's take, we have a few callers. Let me take one more, and then I want to get back to some of the questions I was hoping to ask you as well. So, hi, you're on Talking Animals with Mary Finelli.
Me?
Yes, go ahead, please. Thanks.
Like the last gentleman just said about catching the same fish, I've done that with bass, I've done it with grouper, I've done it where you catch the same fish. Now, I agree with a lot of things that Mary's saying, but what I'm not agreeing with is, number one, Jesus ate fish. He took Simon Peter out. They caught the biggest catch that he's ever caught. You know, it's from the beginning of time, man has eaten fish and other animals. But, you know, eating tofu, I just started eating tofu like 2 years ago. You know, I thought I'd never do that. And you can make it a million different ways, but there's some of the products out there that are horrible tasting. Some of them are very good. You know, you got to find that balance. But the price point for that, for the average human in America at least, some people can't afford that. You know, I'm blessed that I can afford it, but there's people out there that can't afford it. It's cheaper to go to McDonald's and eat processed garbage than it is, you know, to eat fish or a vegan diet. And the other thing, you know, I don't know. This whole thing has got my mind boggled. But
okay,
he's got a valid points, but there's the, you know, I don't get it. You know, the scientists that are studying these studies, number one, have fish that are out of their environment and tanks that are out of their environment, and that's probably why they're acting the way that they're acting. They're not in their natural environment. I've caught fish and 2 minutes later caught the same fish because they're so aggressive, you know?
Okay, so then at that point you're questioning just the legitimacy of the research and the scientific findings that,
I mean, you put anybody into a box and test them and you're going to get not natural results. I mean, it's the facts, you know?
Okay. Well, again, I appreciate your call. Thank you so much.
God bless.
All right. So, Mary, this might circle us back to, I was hoping to come back a little bit to the vegan seafood thing.
Can I respond very quickly to that?
Well, yeah, I'm actually hoping to have you do so, because one of the many things that he mentioned was he seemed open-minded in some ways to trying tofu and some other things. So he had two kind of elements that he seemed to have trouble with there, which was the taste, which one of the things I was going to get into with you anyway was in terms of vegan seafood, just like a lot of vegan products. The tastes have come so far, number one. And number two, related to that in some ways, the costs have also dropped, so that his main concern was, you know, the stuff that he had tried, or some of it at least, just didn't taste good. And two, that it was pretty expensive as opposed to going the fast food route. So you can, you know, respond to his comments in any number of ways, but I would like to include talking a little bit more about vegan seafood and just some of the advances. Again, I don't anticipate our conversation this morning, just as it won't prompt many fishermen to discard their rods and reels. I don't imagine all the fish eaters necessarily going to listening to the show are going to stop. But there are alternatives, and I think a lot of people would be quite surprised just how great and delicious and affordable those alternatives are.
Yes, and I'll just very quickly mention, as far as this point about, you know, Jesus eating fish and Indians eating fish, you know, again, there may have been a time in our history when we needed to do that, but that's no longer the case, and no benevolent spirit would approve of needlessly harming our fellow sentient beings. As far as vegan seafood, you know, it's made with an array of ingredients. Some of them are exotic. Some of them are very commonplace. On our website, you can find just the spectrum of ingredients used to make vegan seafood. And as far as taste, well, you know, that all kinds of foods, people have preferences for all types of food. Some are going to like it. Some aren't going to like it. You find what you like. If for people who like that ocean flavor, you can crumble up some seaweed and put that in. That's what largely gives fish their flavor is seaweed. So you can really recapture that ocean flavor. Spices, cocktail sauce, tartar sauce, you know, for a lot of people, that's the flavor they're really looking for. And you can easily get that. As far as expense for vegan food, you can live much more expensively on a vegan diet than on an animal-based diet. There's beans are a wonderful source of protein and vitamin, protein and nutrients, starches, rice. You can go online and Google inexpensive vegan or budget vegan and find just a plethora of recipes and information that will help you have a healthy, delicious, inexpensive diet.
Well, yeah, to that point, since she lives right in our backyard here, I should point out that author Ellen Jaffe Jones, one of her, I think her first or one of her first books was Vegan at $4 a Day. So there's all kinds of...
very doable.
Yeah, very doable. So we only have just about a minute or two left, Mary. So one of the things I was hoping to get into, and we'll just have to get into, I guess, more abbreviated version of it, some of the things that I think a lot of people would find interesting, whatever their stance is on fishing, eating fish, et cetera, in terms of just fish's intelligence and ability to do things. For example, I think a lot of people might find it very interesting, surprising, that some fish have been observed using rocks as tools. And of course, yeah, you know, some 50 odd years ago, part of what made Jane Goodall's work so revolutionary was observing those chimps using tools. But for a variety of reasons, we now expect chimps and other apes to be capable of quite sophisticated behaviors. We do not necessarily expect those behaviors of fish. So maybe just take a moment or so and talk about the fish using the tools.
Sure. Well, it's been shown that an example of tool use in fish is a tusk fish. They've been videotaped taking a clam and swimming a considerable distance from where they found the clam and using a rock to open the clam shell. There's a new book out called What a Fish Knows by Jonathan Balcom. It's just a treasury of that type of information about and more about fishes. It was just published this month. If you go on Amazon, you can find it, What a Fish Knows. On our website, we have fact sheets, fun facts about fish, all kind of remarkable qualities and abilities and how admirable these animals are. We have a fish sentience fact sheet, acknowledgement by the scientific community that fish are indeed sentient and do feel fear and pain. We have a vegan seafood resource fact sheet. So if you go to our website, fishfeel.org, you'll find just a lot of information there. One thing I'd like to bring up, if we have time, Duncan, is the beautiful cow-nose rays that come up from Florida every year to the Chesapeake Bay to mate and give birth to their pups. They don't mate until later in life, and they only have a single pup each year, so their population is very prone to predation. But they're being falsely blamed for the oyster population crash in the Chesapeake Bay, which in actuality is due to overcollection for human consumption and pollution and disease. And so they've been scapegoated for that, as the scientific community has pointed out. And they're having these bow fishing contests. So they can ride their boat right up on these rays and shoot them with arrow and impale them and haul them out of the water. And they have been beating them. Now they're just throwing them in a bucket to suffocate. And then they have a contest where they weigh them. And afterwards, they've just been dumping them back in the river, or we've seen them thrown right into dumpsters. You know, they're largely inedible, because they have such a high ammonia content. Their flesh basically tastes like urine. So these rays, who are, again, very prone to predation, are being really persecuted in the Chesapeake Bay. If you go on our website, on our homepage, there's red text. If you click on that, it will take you to our page all about the campaign, which includes a petition. And we'd really appreciate if people would sign that petition demanding that the Maryland government protect these animals and stop this horrific animal abuse.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up, because just we had time to get into some of the myriad investigations and campaigns that the Fish Feel pursues. That was a recent one that I wasn't familiar with, and I thought maybe a lot of listeners might not be as well. And again, horrifying, as you've sort of described, and of course with the Florida connection as well.
Right.
So, and just briefly, we just maybe have a minute left if I push it here a little bit, but there's been a couple of questions that have come up by email. I just don't have time to address them all, and we still have, unfortunately, have a caller or two that we're probably not going to get to. A couple of people have asked in one way or another your thoughts on fish for aquariums of one kind or another. I think they, in one case, meant like home aquariums, and another case, I think they may have meant aquariums
public.
That you would go to. Yeah, public.
Yeah.
So just maybe a brief thought or two about those.
Well, we really oppose fish in captivity. You know, the fish, live fish caught industry, the wild caught industry, you know, they're really taking a lot of, this is wildlife that they're removing from the environment. They serve a purpose in the environment. They were evolved to live in that environment. That's the best environment for them, and to take them and put them in captivity is no better than taking any other animals and putting them in captivity. The captive bred industry also causes a lot of animal suffering. Whenever you treat animals like commodities, there's going to be animal suffering and needless death. So we're really opposed to that. If people are interested in having fish as companions and they can provide a decent home for them, then we urge them to adopt from an animal shelter, or there are fish rescue groups. If anyone wants to contact me for information about this or anything, I'll be happy to try to help them. Our email address is info@fishfield.org. As far as public aquariums, again, you know, that's really conveying that it's okay to keep animals in captivity, and we can never really replicate the natural environment, the tides and the currents and the ocean. So it's really, you know, really, really wrong to keep animals in captivity, unless it's for rehabilitation purposes or something like that.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for your time. And for, unfortunately, callers and emailers, I'm just sorry we didn't get to all of you. And maybe down the road we'll invite Mary back on it to cover more topics. But we've been speaking to Mary Finelli of Fishfield. Again, the website is fishfield.org. And there's also, of course, a very active Facebook page. Just search for Fishfield, and you can turn up the page instantly. So, Mary, thank you so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals.
Oh, thank you so much, Duncan. I hope you will have me back.
You bet. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate it.
In a moment, I'll play back the brief conversation I recorded Monday with Jason Flatt, founder of Friends to the Forlorn Pitbull Rescue, an unusual operation. We couldn't do the interview live, for example, the way I typically do these short ones, because in the mornings he's feeding the 31 dogs who live with him, and as you might imagine, it's chaotic and noisy. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. This is Eddie Izzard with a piece called Horse Whisperer in today's Comedy Corner. On Talking Animals.
Horse whisperers, very touchy-feely horse trainers. Ooh, there, boy. Ooh, how tall are you? 15 hands. Ooh. You got 15 hands? You're a Martian? A Martian horse over here. Oh, I see. 15 hands, right. Glad we didn't measure it in feet. Everything's measured in feet except horses, which are measured in hands. What happened there? Someone should be... I'm 9 bottoms tall, you know. Really, are you? Yes. See that building? That's 29 bottoms high. He's 3 thighs tall. 4 kneecaps and a budgerigar. What are horses measured in hands? What the... Anyway, the horse whisperer's obviously... Oh, let's see. Ah, what did you get? It's going. I can't hear what you're saying, actually. I tell you what I said was, why don't you... I can't quite pick it up. Just seemed to be going... Horse shouters should get a lot further, shouldn't they? Walk forwards, you. Walk forwards. Walk, or I hit you with this. Child.
That was Eddie Izzard with a piece called Horse Whisperer, taken from his album Live at Wembley. Now I'm going to play back the brief interview I recorded Monday with Jason Flatt, founder of Friends to the Forlorn Pitbull Rescue, which reflects Flatt's sweeping dedication to rescuing and caring for these dogs. This is Jason Flatt on Talking Animals. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals, Jason.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So why don't we start with just giving us maybe a nickel tour of Friends to the Forlorn Pitbull Rescue. What is it exactly, and what is its mission?
Well, we're a Georgia-based nonprofit pitbull rescue. We established back in 2009. We run the gamut. We do a lot of different work. Not only do we rescue dogs, we take in dogs from bad situations, dogs who need medical help, behavioral help. You know, that's our rescue part of it. We do a lot of outreach work, and we fixed over 3,500 animals for the community at no cost, giving out vaccines, food. We run food pantries, vaccine clinics, you know, of no cost to the community. We do a lot of educational work. We speak at schools, prisons, elementary schools, colleges, universities, you name it, we do it.
Yeah.
We cover all the bases here.
One thing you said early on that might be just briefly expand on a little bit is when you mentioned the dogs that have been through rough situations. Maybe you could elaborate a little bit on that. I mean, you're rescuing pit bulls, but are at least some of these pit bulls been through particularly...
Oh, yeah. A lot of them. I mean, it's the most abused breed. It's the most hated breed. Most dog lovers hate pit bulls. So unfortunately, you know, you see a lot of them when you go into any pound. Majority of the dogs there are pit bull or pit bull mixes. We take them from cruelty cases. We take them from fighting rings. We take them from medical needs, hit by cars, you know, abused. I've taken 4 dogs this year that have been shot in the face with handguns.
By who?
Two of them we don't know. One of them was shot by a police officer.
Okay.
He was serving a drug warrant. SWAT team went in. The guy let his dog loose. Turns out the dog was perfect. The SWAT officer felt bad. He's the one who called us. And we rescued him, and he was fine. You know, these dogs are resilient. They come back from anything. We just took in a little puppy that was hit by a car, has a broken pelvis, broken front leg, and a broken hip.
Holy cow.
Yeah, I mean, that's the norm for us. Just took a dog from a dog fighting raid down in Macon, Georgia. He has a broken front leg and 2 bad knees, and he's heartworm positive.
Jeez.
You know, so
tall task there. So it sounds like the norm, as you call it, is actually the dogs that are through one means or another, extraordinary circumstances, and usually yeah. extraordinary in this case means rough, abused.
Right. You know, we're not afraid to take on the dogs that, you know, that need it the most. And
right.
that's what forlorn means. It means thrown away, discarded, nobody wants you. You know, that's the true definition of what we do. So,
yeah.
you know, we do. We're attracted to the ones that nobody wants. We want the unwanted.
And I don't know if you want to say this over the air, but when we were trading a couple messages to set up the interview, you mentioned the number of pit bulls that you live with or that are mm-hmm. at that facility.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
I don't know, because some places you can't. There's limitations legally of how many.
No, I'm fine. We're licensed up to, you know. In front of the forlorn, we average between 75 and 100 pit bulls in the rescue at any given time. We have a facility which happens to be my house right now. I have 31 pit bulls there. You know, we have acreage and we have yards, and dogs are all inside and everybody's cared for. It's a big place. But we're in the process of beginning stages of planning a really big facility for these dogs. So something that we're working on diligently.
Right. So that might bring us to the fundraising campaign that's mm-hmm. underway for Friends to the Forlorn. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about that campaign.
We're in a month-long fundraising contest right now. There's one. There's four different competitions, and each week there's a different competition. We're actually neck and neck right now. It ends tomorrow at 2:00. It's the rescue that raises the most money by tomorrow at 2:00 gets a $10,000 grand prize, and
So unfortunately, this will air after that cutoff point. But then there's the next. You say there's one.
Yeah, it's month long. It actually ends in August.
Okay, so there's little installments along the way, but mm-hmm. but it's ongoing. So even after this airs Wednesday morning, there'll be another portion of that underway.
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So I guess the idea is that as part of the competition, a rescue hits a certain level, and then if they do, they're further rewarded with an additional sum of money. Is that how it works? Or
yeah, and there's going to be different competitions each week. There's a different competition and it ends in August. So
cool. And so where could people find out either website for the rescue and or for the fundraising campaign?
You can go to our website. It's savingpitbulls.org.
okay.
Savingpitbulls.org. Or you can join our Facebook page. You know, it's Friends to the Forlorn Pitbull Rescue, and there's always notifications and updates on there. We're looking to build a hardcore pitbull facility. We're in the process of talks with the county about rezoning some land that we have, and we've got some plans in place, and we're at the very beginning stages, but the plans are amazing.
And when you say hardcore, it just means like so expansive and you know.
Yeah, we're not looking to cram dogs into a place. We're looking to build two different facilities. One facility is going to be between 25 and 30,000 square feet.
Wow.
It's going to house only 50 dogs.
Wow.
And they're going to have indoor-outdoor runs, the best, you know, no cross-contamination, separate drains, covered runs, indoor and outdoor, indoor play yards, therapy pools, commercial laundry, training areas, the best of the best. And then we're going to have another area just set up for another 25 fighting dogs that have been recovered from fighting raids. And it'll be like a sanctuary. If they're not adoptable, they'll stay there for the rest of their life. And the only time we'll take another dog in is when one leaves. You know,
right.
So our commitment runs pretty deep. You know, dogs stay here forever if they need to.
Right. No, that's one of the, I'm glad you brought that up, because it was one of the things, since we're just about now, unfortunately, out of time, but I was going to point out that one of the things that I found striking about the organization is that if you can't find homes for some of those dogs, and again, some of those dogs have been through such horrific experiences that they're probably hard to place, but that they always have a home at Friends of the Forlorn, safe,
definitely.
Comfortable, and then again, if this facility comes together, it sounds like they'll be sitting pretty in deluxe digs. So
it's going to be amazing. And
yeah.
if we can get to where we want to be, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be the best thing that ever happened to these dogs.
Well, that's cool. And just one other quick thing on a related note, I guess we should point out that in some cases, if I'm not mistaken, you guys take pits from other rescues.
Yeah, right? you know, sometimes people get in over their head and they don't understand the breed.
Yeah.
And sometimes they bite off more than they can chew. And we've taken a lot of dogs from other rescues, you know, when they're ready to give up on them or they can't handle them.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, we have to clean up after a few people here and there.
All right. Well, Jason, well, good luck. So the competition's ongoing. And again, go to savingpitbulls.org to get more information, or just go on to Facebook and search for Friends of the Forlorn, Friends of the Forlorn Pitbull Rescue. And you can get involved and find out more about the operation that way and support them if you're so inclined. So good luck, Jason. Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate the time.
You bet it. Thank you.
Take care, man.